you know, local media has an agenda that they're going to serve. I don't know who's in charge of it or what it is, if it's like a headless monster.
Why? This is a question.
Walking backwards. Yeah. Something sacred.
I don't know the names of the creep songs. Those
running
are
in circles.
Just pop in and let play.
Sea of Glass.
The Flight and the Fall.
I love Ozzy. I think he's the true definition of a rock star. So care about
bumper speakers. Anybody else have any interesting stories they don't want to tell?
This is Doug from After the Fall. Hey, this is John Lane from the Thrive Tropics of Leechburg, Pennsylvania.
The Pennsylvania Rock Show. Featuring the best unsigned rock that Pennsylvania has to offer.
This podcast is part of the Podcast Your Scene Network. Visit us at www.podcastyourscene.com.
You're tuned to the Pennsylvania Rock Show, featuring the best unsigned rock that Pennsylvania has to offer. And I'd give you an episode number, but I've already changed it, and George doesn't even know it. With me on the line right now is George Ivanusik, formerly of Impune and Super Zero and Isotope, and who else?
I did a short stint with the guys, the Climo brothers, when we tried to get that Zion Cross band going, and then I had some other obligations elsewhere that I couldn't kind of be as involved in it as I wanted to, but it was a great experience too, man.
Yeah, those guys, I haven't met them in person yet, but
you should.
They played the Pennsylvania Rock Show anniversary, but I was at Children's Hospital. Both my daughters had pneumonia, and they had left before I got there. So
I think they told me they've been in this music scene since the late 70s, which is
40 years long. They celebrate it this year.
That's a long time to be grinding it out around here and in the club scenes.
And they've always been in a band together for all 40 years.
That's pretty crazy, right?
It is.
You know, two of the nicest guys you'd ever want to meet. Seriously. Happy-go-lucky. You'd never think it by looking at them, and I'm sure I'm not the only person that's ever said that. I mean, just two of the nicest, sweetest guys you've ever met, you know?
Well, they are definitely big dudes.
For sure, man. Yeah, and they're in big hearts too, you know, and big talent and, you know, big drive. You know, everything with those guys is, I can't say enough good about those two guys. I'm curious to hear your Mike Pallone interview. Mike's one of the most important musical figures in my life.
It was a good one. It had almost as many problems as our first attempt at this interview with you, though. There was there were 30-second like I would ask a question and it he wouldn't hear it for 30 seconds. So it was interesting.
That's what you were saying last night. Yeah, that can get interesting pretty quick. It's that echo chamber deal going on with the digital phone.
So George, the big question I have for you is where the nickname Yeti comes from.
A friend of mine, when we were younger, just beer drinking, hell raising young men, spent a lot of time developing the way of the fist. Obviously, this is prior to everyone having some of their own UFC stuff. And, you know, when you're a young man full of testosterone, you like to know how tough you are. And you find out real fast how tough you aren't sometimes. And but I come out of it with a nickname from my best friend. And, you know, once John Lane finds something he thinks is particularly interesting, he'll run with it. And, of course, the next time we were on stage after he found out what that name was, that became my name on stage. you know, it developed legs on its own later on when, like, you remember, of course, like in the early 2000s, there wasn't Facebook. The internet was pretty anonymous if you wanted it to be for yourself. And I just chose that nickname to stay anonymous with. And it just had kind of stuck. And I was just like, whatever, it let it fly. I don't care. I just need something I got to be able to use here to be on these message boards and stuff like that. But I've long outgrown it myself. So, but it's still there and that's fine. And, you know, that's what all my buddies from bands and, you know, different experiences in my life know me as, and it's cool. It is what it is.
Now back when all that was happening, was John the American Hilljack, or was that, did he get that name later?
You probably have to ask him that. I think John has been working on his own, like, personal quote character unquote development for stage use for a long time. And I would say it was in its infancy, but he kind of didn't have the name yet. You know, he didn't have the grasp on exactly the angle he wanted it to be, like, narrowed down as surgically as he does now.
Because I was just curious, like, if you two had nicknames, if the rest of the band did.
Well, I remember there was a nickname, Rob Skinner Perrone.
Oh, yeah, I heard about that nickname a few weeks ago.
Well, then, good. He's not going to come after me with pitchforks.
No, because John told the story with him.
Oh, good. Then I get to deflect.
Yep, you don't even have to tell it.
Pardon me. Okay, well, I'm safe there. Good, that's good. I can't remember what John's primary nickname was. I'm sure everybody in John's life had a nickname for him at one point, but, you know, mine has, fortunately for him and me, mine has always been, he's just a brother, you know what I mean? And that's it.
You were in Impune with John, correct?
Yes.
And then was the Super Zero right after that, or was there a band in between there?
Super Zero was pretty quickly after Impune dissolved. I think Impune dissolved around the fall of 2002, and the guys from Hybrid had approached me earlier than I actually joined the band, and I turned it down because I had still felt like Impune had some legs to it, and I wanted to give it a final shot there because, you know, it's hard for me to say die with a lot of situations, and that was one that I built from the ground up, and it was hard to walk away from once it had completely dissolved, you know. And bands are such a, you know, they're defined as a marriage between a bunch of people. And, you know, it's hard to walk away from a situation when, I mean, we were playing music and covers that I loved, you know, and we were writing music that I absolutely loved. And it was hard to walk away from. It always is hard to walk away from a band, I think, in any regard. You know, for me, it's always been, I can't speak for anyone else, but for me, it's always a tough decision. So Terry, I think Terry had actually approached me maybe earlier in the winter, and then Matt privately or separately. There's a few different times that, you know, they're like, just come out and jam with us, you know, see what happens, blah, blah, blah. And I was kind of like, you know, I was in my postpartum of just, you know, having my bone barren crash and burn, and spent the winter just working on my chops and stuff. And then I sat down with some of their music one weekend. And I think I emailed Matt a clip of me playing some tunes. And he's like, dude, get your ass out here. And I said, all right. And I think we practiced. I really think this all seems, in my memory, to have happened very quickly. You know, like, I emailed them. They're like, well, we had someone else, but just come on out and see. And then something happened with the other guy they had, and he was traveling at the time or something. Long story short, I got the gig. But the way I got the gig was really interesting. They were like, hey, how many songs can you learn for Thursday's practice? I'm like, I'll learn your whole album, I guess, and what covers? And they're like, well, just learn these six songs. So we went, we jammed those six songs on a Thursday or a Friday or something, and then again on a Saturday. And then that following Tuesday, we opened for LA Guns at the American Music Cafe out there in Plumborough. Or is it Plumborough?
Is that 286?
Yeah.
Off of there? Yeah. That's Plumborough.
Yes. We, you know, 4 days after basically learning all their tunes, not all of them, but you know, the meat and potatoes of their original stuff. We were off and skyrocketing on our within 3 days. The name change occurred, and we had a logo design. And I mean, Matt Ferrante is just, you know, he's the guy you want at the helm when it comes to designing art and stuff like that.
Yeah, I remember making hybridonline.com point to superzero.net and putting that the picture of you guys. I remember that.
I do too, man. Believe it or not.
I never knew the story behind it.
I look fondly at those days because for me, you know, that'll tell you what you're made of. Can I go up and play in front of 600 people with this place that's packed? And then the funny part was, like, LA Guns had their own, like, technical difficulty. I don't even know what intonation of that band at that time the membership was, but it was booked as LA Guns. And they had their own, like, technical problems when we were done playing. And, like, most of the crowd bailed. And I remember the road manager being, you know, pretty unhappy about that. You know?
Of course he was.
But it wasn't anything. I was just happy that I was like, man, we pulled this off. That was like 11th hour. It was pretty cool stuff. And, you know, like, that was the thing for me. Like, I knew just you looking over at these guys on the stage and they're just killing it as hard as you are. And you're trying to kill it for them even harder. And it was an amazing experience, man. Being in that band was an amazing experience. And you know from our conversation a little bit last night for how highly I think of each and every one of those guys in that band.
So while you're talking, I'm looking through songs that I have, and I'm curious. I have a couple songs that John sent me.
John Lane?
Yeah.
Okay.
One is BYOB. And then one, I don't know. I don't have them tagged other than John Lane. Another one called Homemade 2 and Stone Cold. Are you familiar
with Bill, I would have to
hear them. You'd have to hear them.
But, yeah, because, well, when I practiced, well, we played with Impune, we practiced in my basement. So we had high-tech equipment, too. Like, I had an old boombox radio that I put dryer lint in a cardboard toilet paper tube to keep it from distorting the microphone, and turn the microphone towards the door, put it behind like a shelf so you could just hear enough drums, guitar, bass, and vocals where it wasn't distorting. And it took a long time to actually perfect that. And I think John would sit over there while we were writing songs, and he was supposed to be writing lyrics, but he would just be making new cardboard microphone baffle distortion tubes or whatever the hell he called them. I think we had like four original tunes that we recorded to cassette, and it never went anywhere.
And then I look in my Super Zero folder, and I have Compromise, Cruel Intentions, Differences, Down With Me, and Goodbye Again.
So those would all be original songs that those guys wrote with Jared Grease when he was the guitar player in Hybrid that we kind of redid. And some of them we recorded, like we re-recorded, and some of them were just left that we just replayed live, like we had our own twist on it. I think there were some down-tuned in there, maybe some drop-tuned, stuff like that. And it was fun to go in and rework some of them songs and put my own, you know, my own personal twist on it. And those guys, like, again, was the first musical situation where I walked into and they're like, dude, carte blanche, whatever you want to do. And I'm like, really? These are your songs? They're like, just do what you want. And, you know, we would jam on stuff. And, you know, Matt has a very trained ear. As soon as he hears a hook or something that's an earworm, he'll make you, you know, Yeti, play that again. Terry, sing it like that again. Exactly. And then that usually when that happens, like, it's kind of one of those no brainers, you know?
Uh-huh.
And I just learned to defer to Matt's ear to what was going to be received well with our fans. And he knows his fan base, and who the hell's going to argue with that guy, you know? I'm sure I did millions of times, and he was like, I'm going to hit this dude in the back of the head with a pull cue one of these nights. But that's what being in a band's about, writing songs and fighting for your little, you know, part of the pie to stick around. And you know, full well realizing that, you know, I'm a wordy person, and I know my guitar playing is very wordy also. But as I've gotten older, I've learned to choose my words a little more carefully. It's wisdom. That whole Mike Pallone thing we were talking about, you learn from guys like him.
Yeah, I tell you what, you know, I've talked to him on stage, just, you know, short conversations. I was very impressed when I talked with him the other day. He's very articulate and very caring. Like, you know, he's up on stage and it looks like he wants to rip your head off while he's playing. He's not that guy.
Yeah, he's like the nicest guy in the world. For real. Like, I've known that guy a long time. I mean, I told you last night, he saw me through some dark times as a friend. I couldn't never thank him enough for some of, I mean, I've spent late nights and 4 or 5 in the morning, and we both had to be at work at 8 in the morning or 7 in the morning, and sitting up there at Klondike Studio, just, you know, hashing out life. Cause I think he's a few years ahead of me age wise and about 70 million years ahead of me wisdom wise. Like, that guy's always been one of the wisest people I've ever met, you know? That comes off immediately when you talk to him. Like, dude, this guy's levels, his perception, he's a pretty perceptive person, man.
They have a new EP out as of February 25th. It's 4 songs, and it is called Everything Is Fine.
I'll definitely be looking for that.
And it is actually the last 4 songs that Keith Queter recorded before he passed away.
Yeah, I'll be definitely looking for that. I met Keith, probably met Keith 3 or 4 times, maybe a couple times, like at a party for a family member that, you know what I mean? Like Mike and I had some connections through a mutual friend that I considered family. And, you know, I spent some personal time with those guys outside of band stuff. And, you know, you really get to know people, man, when you, like, sometimes music just takes a backseat, and it just, you know, it just becomes all about personal relationships and friendships, and all that other stuff just kind of doesn't matter, especially now when you're, you know, 15 years later, I'm older and I have children, and you just see the way the world really kind of works. You don't have this myopic view of, oh, I'm a freaking rock star because I played the Blue Haven Lounge and there were 700 people there. You know what I mean? Like, things change real quick when you see three children be born, as you know yourself, you know, and other stuff happens in life. But, you know, Mike Pallone's always been one of those constants for me that, you know, I've always felt like he's been a prime motivation for me. Like when we played an Isotope at Klondike Studios, where Whiskey High and later on Skell, you know, based their home operations out of, I got to see real under a microscope, like what it actually takes, that it isn't just about keeping your chops up and your gear up, and it's about so much other stuff. And I learned a million things about the business from Mike that invaluable, you know. But as far as, like, Mike's a high watermark for me. Like, I would always play and still do, and, you know, hope to achieve playing wise, you know, half of that. If I do before I die, man, I'd be a happy guy, because there's a million guitar players in the world, Bill, but there aren't a lot of, like, great, well-rounded ones that can play their way out of any situation, and Mike's one of them. He is.
I asked him who his biggest influence was, and it caught me a little off guard. He told me Jimi Hendrix.
Yeah, and that's his guy. He had said to me, so you have Hendrix fan? I'm like, yeah, well, I mean, I'm a little later on, like, I got caught up early in hair metal and then heavier stuff as time went. But that's what started me, was, you know, the mid 80s hair metal stuff. And that's what wanted me to grab a guitar, made me want to grab a guitar. The Randy Rhoads tribute album, basically. And he said to me, he's like, dude, you got to go back and check out Hendrix. He's the quintessential rock star. He's the only real rock star there ever was, if you think about it. He's like, he's a black man in the late 50s, early 60s, slept with his guitar in the army, you know, got in trouble for carrying his guitar everywhere, got kicked out of bands because he was playing guitar in ways that nobody wanted anyone to play guitar, you know. That's his guy, man, you know. I totally understand that because I have my own, you know, I have my own kind of holy trinity of guitar players. And
well, see, that's where I was headed. I was going to ask you the same question.
Oh, boy. It's, Bill, you got to, it's splitting hairs. I mean, you really, for me, I think the one that will always be like, no shame in getting that guy tattooed on my arm is Randy Rhodes. Probably next would be Dimebag Darrell. After that, I mean, it's a close third for about 90 people. And a lot of those guys are local guys. You know, probably my newest favorite guitar player in the world in the last 7 years, I had sent you some clips. His name's Andy Wood. He played with Scott Stapp when Scott did that Creed, Scott Stapp's Creed a few years ago, and I saw him live and it just blew my mind. And then Andy Wood actually ended up being the touring mandolin / guitar player for Rascal Flatts for the last year and a half. And now he's in a band called Low Cash. And some people just, it should be illegal to be that good. And he's a nice guy. Like I was saying to you last night, he's such a nice guy, man. That's the common theme with all these people. Like that was the main thing I learned that when I've met these people is like that humility and that soft-spoken, you know, every fan matters is something I took from that, you know. And I'm glad I was able to see into that window because I've met my share of rock stars, and I'm sure you have, and you walk away like shaking your head going, dude, how do you even have any fans? And I'm not going to name names there. I'll name the good ones, but I won't name any foul taste in the mouth guys.
I'm gonna give you the biggest one that I've met, and the story that goes along with it. I met Gene Simmons at a book signing, and most people probably think that would have went badly, as he doesn't have a great reputation. But I was using I'm sure you remember it. I had an old Sony Mavica camera that you put mini CDs in.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was using that to take pictures of him. And that was our conversation. He was asking me how the camera worked.
And then he was like, could you do me a favor and pose for me inside the Kiss coffin here on the side, please? Something like that, right?
I mean, he was really cool. And I don't know how he treated everybody else that day, but he was interested in my camera, so he was nice to me.
Could you imagine, though? I mean, seriously, could you, like, sit back and think about it? Imagine you're Gene Simmons. Just think about that for a second. And then think about, like, since the Climo brothers have been in the music scene around, you know, this tri-state area and you know, larger, Gene Simmons has been world recognized for 44 years or whatever for being Gene Simmons.
Yeah.
I mean, at some point you got to say, all right, guys, this is getting old and my head's getting big and whatever it is. I've never met him, so I reserve the right to have my own opinion about it when I meet him. But I'm glad your experience was good with him because I've heard a lot of opposite viewpoints.
Yes. My aunt met him in the 70s. I can't remember the year. She was working as a waitress at a truck stop, and Kiss stopped, and they were trying to give her their autographs, and she was like, no, I know who you are. And they're like, well, don't you want our autograph? She's like, no.
That's pretty funny.
I was like, you're kidding me.
Apparently Gene and Lois from Family Guy go way back there, right? If you saw that episode.
I did not.
Well, but, and that's falling on one set of deaf ears right now. And
I feel like I'm pretty sure I know what you meant by that. But hey, let's take a break. I'm gonna play a Super Zero song.
Okay.
You tell me which one out of the ones I told you.
Play Compromise. That's always a good ass kicker.
Okay, so we're gonna play Compromise, which featured Matt Franny on drums, Steve Craven on bass. Terry McCausland, now known as Terry Lee Spencer, on lead vocals, and
what's up, Terry?
Yeti on guitar. And we will be right back here on the Pennsylvania Rock Show. That was Super Zero Compromise from, what year was that, George? Do you remember?
We re-recorded that in like spring of 2003, I want to say. If that was in fact the re-recorded version. Because sometimes I've heard some versions, like people will come to me and be like, hey, is this you? And I'm like, no, that's actually Jared. You got a hold of a file that was just renamed Super Zero because someone probably didn't have the new CD at the time.
I'm pretty sure that I took that one off of a black disc with blue lettering.
That's the one.
I can remember seeing it.
Listen, if the guitar sound was great, it was Jared. If it was crappy and harsh and digital sounding, it was me. That's it. that's what it is. I have a very digital, cold sounding sound.
Hey, you know, speaking of we were talking about Kiss off the air. Don't you think Jarrett looks a lot like Bruce Kulick?
Jared Grease looks like Bruce Kulick. I could see the resemblance, but yeah, I could see where you say that.
I used to harass him about that.
Have you talked to him lately, Jared? He's a good dude. I talk to him periodically.
He shows up in my timeline on Facebook occasionally. And sometimes I'll make a comment about what's Bruce Kulick doing on my timeline. But,
he's also in Tennessee, right?
Yeah, I think he might be in Nashville. I'm pretty sure that he's done some studio playing, if I'm not mistaken.
That's another outstanding guitar player. Like, and I didn't know who he was until I had initially saw him in Hybrid. And then he would come to shows for Super Zero. He's a super nice guy and real down to earth and talk to me about guitar stuff. And we're best friends immediately. You know what I mean? Gear and modes and theory and any of that stuff. I'm just, that's my, after the kids and wife, that's my love of my life there. All of it, and I've been immersed in it for 30 years. And it, I was telling somebody the other day, I said, it's gotten to the point where I still play so much that now my carpal tunnel and tendonitis get so bad I have to take a 4-week break off. If I'm really at it hard for say 10 or 12 days, 6-8 hours a day, I got to take a break for a month. And I said to my wife, I'm going to have to start teaching myself to play left-handed because I can see where this is going to be a problem later in my life. And I don't want to be stuck out there floating around with no oars or no tools to float around this ocean of music that's constantly pouring out of my head. I mean, I was telling you a little bit about how I go about my musical endeavors, and basically is I wait till everybody's, sleeping and settled and there's no distractions, and I put my mood lighting on and put the headphones on and start warming up, and something will inevitably come out within that first hour, and I'll try to set the metronome, tap the metronome speed out, and then play riffs and play that first initial riff, and then try to write a song off that first initial riff and keep it under 5 or 6 minutes, which never happens. I have 35 minute songs that are legitimately could be 35 minute jams,
In a God of the Vita.
No, not quite. I'm not quite so good. my stuff tends to be a little more jagged around the edges. But after doing that for a few years, I've honed it down to where I know, all right, dude, you need to shut up here and move on. Or one of the problems I always have when it's a guitar-oriented song with just a metronome going in the background, how do you end it? There's no one there to build a crescendo. There's no climactic thing going on unless you build it yourself. So I've kind of learned a little bit about writing songs in a ways that I wouldn't, because I don't have a band around me or any other input, But basically, it's about 95 or 100 gigabytes of just ideas that I can always fall back on. And one of the other things I told my wife is I always feel like there's music playing in my head, and the only time it gets to come out is if I'm humming or whispering or whistling or singing or playing guitar. And I kind of feel like when you plug the guitar in, and at least for my head, might as well just plug the plug into my head and let it pour out, because it's kind of tapping into something that's just constantly there. My mind never shuts down anyways.
I think my son is similar to that. He's constantly humming or whistling or making noise, and he's learning how to play the trumpet.
That's cool.
I came home from school one day and he's like, Dad, check this out. And he pulls out his trumpet and starts playing the Imperial March. And I'm like, where did you learn that? He's like, I YouTubed it.
That's pretty awesome. Yeah. And I get buddies that'll ask me, dude, can you just have me come over and teach me some stuff? I'm like, listen, man, you can learn whatever you want on YouTube. If you want to learn and then you really like it after that, then I'll sit down and we'll start shedding some picks. Then I'll start teaching you some acrobatics and some of the stuff I picked up along the way. Early on, I went, I would say I probably got my first guitar in 86, and I hated it because it's hard. And I was going to a local music store and they were teaching me Mel Bay stuff, and I just wanted to play Metallica and Guns N' Roses and Motley Crue and all that stuff. And I put it down for a while and came back to it. And all of a sudden, a year and a half later or a year later, I had this uncanny knack to just be able to, if the guitar was in tune, which I didn't know how to do because I didn't have a tuner, but if my cousin tuned it for me, I could just pick stuff out by ear if it was in the same tuning that the songs I was listening to. If it was a drop half step down, or, you know, if it was a drop D song by then, I would have a little more trouble with it. But I had an ear early on, and my dad's like, "Hey, man, I think you ought to stick with this, and maybe we'll get you a different guitar teacher that somebody's a little bit more your style." And I went to pianos and stuff in Blahnox, and my first real guitar teacher, well, not real, but my first guitar teacher that I was like blown away by was a guy, his name's Darren Lazari. And he's on Facebook. He's got a little bit of a musical history himself that I'm sure he's proud of. He's a phenomenal guitar player, and he just taught me all these learning curve tricks. And I took them and ran with them. Like, you show a guy like me a shortcut, I'm going to find seven other shortcuts for that short. You know what I mean? Like, so he was one of the first guys, again, that told me, play all over the neck. If you break a string, you're going to want to know if you're on stage, you got to play the song and get through it. And the second time, of course, when I heard someone tell me that was Nick Catanese, when I would go see High Voltage around the local Pittsburgh area. And I was immediately attracted to their music, and Nick's just such a great guy.
Speaking of nicknames, he has a cool one.
Evil Twin?
Yeah.
Do you know why?
I don't.
Because Zach Wild has – now, Nick played with Zach for years, and Zach Wild has a very distinct vibrato technique that includes a pinch harmonic. It's that scream that Zach does during the end, or – you know, the middle of some of his guitar riffs.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a very popular technique now, but back then, not many people were hitting pinch harmonics and making them scream like that. And Nick just had this uncanny knack for, he just sounded exactly like whatever he was playing. And I guess Zach named him the Evil Twin.
Okay, then.
I have some Evil Twin guitar picks, actually.
There are quite a few guitarists that have made it fairly big from this area.
Oh yeah,
you know, Reb Beach,
Paul Gilbert,
yeah,
Reb Beach, Nick. And that's just the name, the metal guys. Like I met Paul Gilbert in 1989. They played at a place out, I think, in Monroeville or somewhere, called Club 22. The only reason I know is because I still have the ticket stub when it was Mr. Big.
Okay.
And he stayed after the show and talked to me and my buddy. Like, he came out to get something. He's like, "Oh, I still got fans out here." And he came over and started talking to me. And I'm like, "Hey, man, I'm trying to play guitar like you. What do I got to do?" And he's like, "Learn as much theory as you can and focus on your technique, and you'll be good in no time, kid." And he's like, "Don't worry about what anybody tells you you're supposed to do. Just learn as much as you possibly can." And I thought that was great advice. I'm lucky to have those interactions with guys like that.
Let's play another song.
Sure.
I don't know who we should play, though.
You gotta play some Skell. You play, how about you play... Let's go deeper than Skell. Do you have any Whiskey High?
I don't. And that actually came up in the interview with Mike Pallone. I've had some in my possession. But 2 years ago when I did the Pennsylvania Rock Show, I sent messages out to a bunch of local musicians and like, "Hey, I'd like to give away some, you know, t-shirts and CDs from local bands. Would you be willing to give me some?" And, you know, and, he sent me some Whiskey High stuff. And I really wanted to keep it, but he sent it for me to share. So I shared it. And I made a comment about that during the interview. And he's like, "I'm sending you some more." I said, "Okay, that's awesome." So
yeah, you got to get some Whiskey High stuff going, man.
I will have some. I just don't currently.
Well, then I will defer to my brother, John Lane, and tell you to pick any of the Hellfire Club songs that you have available to
you,
catalog.
You know what the problem is with that?
That you hate John Lane?
No. No, they don't have anything recorded.
I thought he sent me a couple things that maybe it was for my ears only then.
It could be the stuff that it, Did it sound live?
It sounded part like This is, you know, I'm talking about 2 years ago.
Demon in Me was probably one of them.
You know what? I think it was.
Yeah, they have some YouTube videos that aren't terrible, but they're not quite up to par for what I'm playing.
Well, then let's go with my boys, my brothers from After the Fall, and put that song for me on, because that song is a true ass kicker, man. That whole album, again, like I said last night, just hearing that album a year and a half ago when Matt sent me some of them songs, it just changed my life. And I went and learned like 5 or 6 of those songs, you know, just because you get inspired and then that mode and you see what your friends are doing. And yeah, man, I want to play along with my buddies still. And it's cool that I'm able to do that. You know, I like doing that.
Okay. So that's what we'll do. And I want to throw another old school band out there that maybe we'll play before the night's over. I have Something Sacred. Do you remember that band?
Yeah. Yep. Sammy. I remember the drummer, Sammy, right?
Yep.
And I forget the singer's name. But the guitar player's name was Brian.
Uh-huh.
He had blonde hair. Sammy, I've known Sammy a long time, actually. I've known Sammy since I was in Isotope.
And old Paul from Big House Pete was in that band?
Yeah.
And the singer, I can't remember his first name, but... his last name is Vasey. He's Michael Vasey's brother.
Okay.
Mike is he works at pianos and stuff, coincidentally. But
you've got to close the show out with some Big House Pete too, because I mean, if you want to talk about one of the most kick-ass guitar players in the city of Pittsburgh, it's Paul Peterson. I mean, I didn't even think to bring his name up to you last night. I was thinking about it earlier today. Yeah, you got to play some Big House Pete tonight before we get off here.
Okay, so we're going to go with After the Fall at this point. Which song did you say?
For me, okay. But not for me, for everyone else out there. For them.
Let me make sure I have that. I think so. It's off the last disc, right?
Yep.
Yeah, I should have it, but let me double check just to make sure.
And if you have not gone out and bought that CD... After the Fall, My Confessions, you are way behind the curve and you need to. That's my musical opinion, because it's a killer album.
Yeah, I have the whole album. I thought I did.
Not you, I'm just in general, if people out there don't know and enjoy our type of, you know, heavier melodic music, that's, you know, that's the penultimate judgment, you know, like thing that I judge all other local albums that I hear by.
Here, I have a quick story, and then we'll listen to For Me by After the Fall. So one of the coolest things that has happened to me in the years that I've been working with bands is a lot of bands will put me in the liner notes, and they'll mention my websites by name and mention me by name, which is awesome. And usually it's bands that I've done websites for and bands that I have a history with, like you know, the After the Fall all the way back through to Hybrid. Other than the Hybrid Substance, because I didn't know them when that was released. I pretty much am in those because we have a history. But this past summer, Homicide Black released an EP. And, you know, I've had them on the show a couple of times. I talked to them, you know. They put me in theirs. And that really, I was like, wow. Because I didn't realize that I had that reach. Because, you know, there really wasn't... Yeah, it was cool.
Do have that reach, man. I think any Pittsburgh musician and any local musician in the tri-state area that hasn't, you know, for lack of a better term here, tapped into what you guys have to offer, they should be, because, you know, Bill's a good friend to have, you know. And I've been friends. How long have we been friends? As long as, you know, you've been a little less longer than you've been friends with Matt and Steve. But
yeah.
You know, I know you're a hard working, bust your ass type of dude when it comes to all this promo and all the stuff you do. And I'm not even in the music scene. And I tell you, man, I really appreciate what you do, because that's got to be a workload.
That's what we're going to talk about when we come back.
Sure.
You not being in the music scene.
Oh.
So up next, we have After the Fall for me off of My Confession. And I think I'm going to throw a Something Sacred song in here at this point, too. I'm going to go pull that folder up and tell you which one it is. Let me see. If you listen to
the cover of,
Go ahead. That's okay. If you listen to the intro to the Pennsylvania Rock Show, they are mentioned by name in the intro by Paul Peterson.
That's cool, man.
I think we're going to play. It's so hard looking at these.
Do you have their cover of Cemetery Gates from Pantera?
No, no. I have.
Slay that song, man.
Here's what I have. Be Not Afraid, Century, Control, Danger.
Control? Yeah.
Okay. So, After the Fall, For Me and Something Sacred, Century, up next on the Pennsylvania Rock Show. I'll be right back with George the Yeti, High the Music. Okay.
Yeah.
ourselves After the Fall for me and Something Sacred Control here on the Pennsylvania Rock Show. We're going to do a couple more minutes with the Yeti. While you were listening to those, I was introducing him to Xander Damos. And if you aren't familiar with Xander, you should go to xanderdamos.com. It's D-E-M-O-S. His last name is Xander, Z-A-N-D-E-R. Xander Damos.
I second that. Pick up there and check him out because that's some amazing stuff he's doing there.
But so before we took this short break, the topic of you and not being in the music scene has popped up, and I know you left the scene kind of against your own will, and you mentioned to me that you were thinking about getting back in. And that's when I was like, well, let's do an interview.
Yeah. Well, life took hold with its reins like it usually does with people and life. And I had to step away for a while, but, you know, never stopped playing. Actually played more because I had more time. And like I said, I write songs constantly and always try to commit my ideas down to recording and have two backup drives with all my stuff on it. So just in case, you know, because that would be years of heartbreak there if I lost that stuff. And, you know, it's nice to have the confidence that if I got into a band situation, like, all right, well, how many ideas you have here? Just plug this drive and start listening. Cause what do you want? You know, cause I've long since quit trying to remember my ideas, figuring most of them are rough. At best, rough sketches played to a metronome just to capture the groove and the idea. And it works really well because there's times I can go back and go, okay, right around May of 2015, I remember something stuck out because of this, this, and this happened. I have a weird memory like that. So I can go back and kind of and dig in the catalog that way. But most of it's just guitar gibberish. I try to keep the noodling to the minimum because, you know, I try to get the noodling going when I warm up and then try to get my song groove and rhythm. And, you know, I'm supremely interested in rhythm and how heavy and how dark and how sludgy. And I've really taken a liking these last 5 years to stoner doom and doom metal and sludge and, you know, bands like Sleep, the quintessential, you know, giant of that genre. And Electric Wizard, Dope Lord, Weed Eater, Bong Ripper. I mean, all the funny names that I'm going to say, but they're just phenomenal bands, man. They just go up there and they just slay it, you know? And I love that. I love that approach, you know? And that's probably the kind of situation that I'd be looking for. But listen, man, they're, you know, there's so many musical situations out there that I would be remiss to turn away from anything. You know, beggars can't be choosy in my situation. And, yeah, I would welcome all people to, if you're looking for a guitar player with some experience and good gear and, you know, transportation, and I would say a relatively mature outlook on life now that I'm in my 40s. I definitely always looking for the right situation and the right people that you can sit down and spend time with and write songs. And that's the most important to me, is would be writing songs. I probably wouldn't want to play in a wedding band just to be out playing. I know I'd be miserable two gigs into it, you know, just to be playing songs. That's, you know, and money and gigging never really cared about it. As long as they fed me and gave me beer at the show, I was happy and let me play loud. Like I didn't really give a care. I'm looking though, man. And, you know, I'll even go as far to say that, I'm not static to this area. I'd be willing to make the right move for the right people or the right situation. You know, I got a family, and fortunately for us, we're now capable of, you know, if we need to move here an hour east or an hour west or whatever, I can, you know, I can kind of consider that situation, but, you know, it's gotta be the right situation.
Have you played out acoustically?
No, been a long time. I think the last time I probably had an acoustic in my hand in public was maybe when Terry and I used to do like those off nights when Super Zero had some off night shows. We'd go do like an acoustic with, like, he would do mainly a whole acoustic set and I'd join him for a few songs, like mainly the original songs that we wrote and stuff like that. But acoustically, no, I haven't really done much there. I did some acoustic stuff in the late 90s with Chris Dittman, believe it or not. And it just never grew wings. But I loved, like, I'll say this, like, if I were to pick a singer to be in a band with, that would be my guy, because I was never in, quote, in a band with him. I've, you know, played shows with him and shared stage with him and jam songs, jam nights and all that stuff. And, you know, if you want to if you want to put another supreme talent from the Pittsburgh area out there, that dude's got a voice that I think is unmatched. Maybe one of the best male vocalists I've ever heard.
Yeah, I don't disagree. There, and again, there are quite a few really good singers from this area too. Bill Postal from Doppler Effect, Chris Dittman, Mike Pirock from Creep, and Mona Lisa Smile, and Here and Now, and oh, come on, what other bands are is he in right now? Why am I blanking?
You're asking the wrong guy, man. I know. Again, I'm so hermity, and if that's even a word, I'm just so, I live under such a rock of existence. Like, I don't even really listen to a lot of music, to be quite honest. Like, I just like doing my own thing and seeing where it leads me, and kind of cut out that outside influence of what everyone else is doing, and try to just get somewhere on my own and see where it leads. And usually, it leads nowhere. But I won't lie, there's occasionally I'll get lucky one night and be able to clip down a 5-minute song with five or six parts that I could say, man, if it had a band, I could take this to a band and it would actually be something, you know.
Mm-hmm. All right, so how can someone get a hold of you if they're interested in
Sorry about that. Easiest way would be Facebook, George Ivanusic, George Ivanusic. And that's the guy there with the devil on the skateboard. And you'll find me, and I'm usually on Messenger for various reasons. And I'll do what I can to get back to people if I get any hits and let you know what's going on with me for sure. Keep you in the loop. Once you let John Lane in on something, I have a feeling John will do his best for me to get people over, you know, get people like that might be the guy that might, you know, because John's a good promoter, man. And I won't complain about that. Yeah. So I'm looking, and I reserve the right to be picky, but I also want anyone that's looking for bandmates to reserve their right to be picky too.
Hey, so we talked about finishing the show up with the Big House Pete song, and
sure.
I'm guessing that you are going to pick one off of Junk Punch, because Where's My Check is probably too new for you.
Paul's going to punch me in the stomach. I don't know any of his specific songs. Seen them live, heard some of their stuff, you know, later on the radio and the Sunday night segments that they do. And I just always appreciated his way of songwriting and his ease of use with words, getting the point across real fast and usually with a good
bit of humor.
Here comes the gear, man. That hella hoopty. I'm cruising around that new can town. The ghetto bird is in the air.
Yeah, it is.
All the homies coming's like a big old ghetto nightlight. But they just keep on slinging their cane and causing their pain.
Yeah, they go.
I guess everybody feels like they should stop, but they don't. So here they come again in the ghetto bird. The light is shining down on your little ghetto town. What is up? What the fuck is up? 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 What is up? What the fuck is up?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I want to give a shout out to my brothers in Skell, and absolutely my brothers in After the Fall, and of course John Lane and Robbie Perrone, and you know all the local people around here, man. When you have a band like Fist Fight in the Parking Lot and After the Fall and Big House Pete and Skell, and these guys are just killing it every weekend here, like, you're lucky. And now I'm able to go see shows, so I'm definitely going to be going to, you know, go check some shows out. And thanks for bearing with and listen to my cerebral yibber yabber. And hey, if you're a guitar player, man, keep at it and play every note and play it hard and play it fast.